Okay, this is the hour we're going to take your calls with Linda Moulton Howe. We call it Conversations with Linda. Questions, or perhaps you're a whistleblower and want to share a story with us. We'll get to that in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Linda Moulton Howe with us. We'll get to your phone calls and perhaps your stories as well. Festive time, Linda, my favorite time of year. How about you?
Oh, yes. If the whole planet could just hang on to, I want to help people, everything would change.
Sure would. It sure would indeed. Linda, as you look into your crystal ball of the future, what do you see about disclosure? You know, I Steve Bassett and I go at it. He thinks government's going to disclose. I don't. He was hoping for Hillary to get elected, hoping that John Podesta would be able to get some answers out for us. But what do you see? Do you think government's ever going to do that?
Well, I really did think that Hillary Clinton was going to be elected and that John Podesta, who has been working for a decade or more on setting up the pawn pieces on the chessboard to break this open, starting with "We're not alone in this universe." And once they get that headline out around the world, then being able to use those words that Hillary Clinton used on Jimmy Kimmel, they may have been here already. Remember when she said that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That is a very, very important phrase, and it's in that interview that I did with Tom DeLonge and talked with William Tompkins about that the Greeks and the Anunnaki were extraterrestrial civilizations, that the universe has other intelligent life in it. This is what we all need to have laid out in front of us with facts, what our government knows about the true history of this planet, if we could just get that much done and then start moving the whole world onto a different square that is us, a universe, trade routes, wars, friendlies, unfriendlies, and that will then finally be the truth. And it might, George, it might change some of the geopolitical energy on this planet for humans to be fighting humans if they knew that there's a much bigger picture and there are much other larger forces at work in the universe. It might make us as a human family, regardless of skin, background, and all, we might come together more as a unified, less tribal warfare planet. And if that would occur, then it would be a positive step.
I am amazed, Linda, at how many people and scientists believe that there could be extraterrestrial life out there, but they refuse to accept the fact that it may have already come here. They just won't go there.
Well, I don't understand how any scientist can look at the molded big structures like Ollantaytambo in Peru. A lot of people haven't been there. I have. I've crawled all over it. And there are 20-ton huge, they're molded. We're talking about molds. It's like the same at Punku. It's molded. And you can't explain it with native people taking a file or trudging in the dirt. These are huge, gigantic, heavy molded pieces. The whole pyramid at Cairo and the Sphinx, they are not, I don't care what Zai Hawass or anybody says, they were not made by humans dragging ropes and logs. And when you talk with people who have served in the government and they have been close to some of the MJ-12 operations, one of the first things that I've always been told is, yes, we're dealing with extraterrestrials that know how to neutralize gravity, and they have made all kinds of structures on this planet that serve their purposes, and they were not made by humans. And I don't understand, frankly, why this is now so difficult in the 21st century to just start telling the truth.
Let's go to the calls now. We pick it up by going to Sam in Phoenix, Arizona. Hi, Sam. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Linda.
Hey,
how are you?
Good to have you with us. And I guess that's short for Samantha, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Okay.
Happy Thanksgiving, Samantha.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving, definitely. And thank you for staying up late with the rest of us insomniacs in the world.
Right.
Linda, I wanted to know if you had heard any connection between the pinging that you reported on up in Greenland, and anything about Admiral Byrd's reports on the alien life that was in his diary from the Antarctic and the Arctic.
Well, it's valuable that you have brought that up, because what the Greenland, or going up to that area where Igloolik is, I found myself going back into my own earthfiles.com website, which now it's breaking the 2,500 barrier, and I'm headed toward 3,000 in-depth reports. And of those, there is a 20-part series that I did with a man who worked for the CIA. His cover was Army. He went to Area 51. He was with his boss from Langley. He did see a gray in an underground room at Area 51. And one of the big, I'm going to call it chunks of information that his boss at the CIA wanted to know about was the relationship between Adolf Hitler, extraterrestrials, the technology, and Antarctica. And when you... if you read all of those 20 parts that I have at Earth Files under the name Cooper, K-E-W-P-E-R, or Stein, S-T-E-I-N, and you look at what he said was what they found, what they researched, and that one of the interesting documents that his boss found in an underground archive underneath the Langley building was dated 1921 or 1927. He knew that, he remembered that the number was thin and it was a 1 or a 7, talking to me about this 15 years ago. But he said it stated that MI5 or MI6 in London had communicated. We didn't even have a CIA. We didn't have a Pentagon in the 1920s. But they were communicating with our government, asking if we had any information about what the silver disks were that were rising from a place in Germany called Peenemünde. And this was a 1920s report. That's what Cooper Stein was describing for me, that he saw with his own eyes in an archive underneath Langley with his boss. And that they knew that there was a direct context that was not human, that Adolf Hitler was under the influence or working with or collaborating with or manipulated by non-humans, and that eventually they would come to learn, and this is to me is fascinating, that there could be a 13 million, 15 million, or 50 million year old, I'm going to just say presence, somehow underneath the Antarctic ice sheet that is down in the actual land, that under research that I've done, the I think 13 million or 14 million years ago is when they think was the last time that the Antarctic land was free of ice. Well, if there are pyramid structures, which are some of the rumors, if there are real pyramid structures somehow in the ground, under the ice, I don't know.
Wow, what a story.
They would be 13 to 14 million years old and older. That would overnight revolutionize our entire relationship with planet Earth and what is there and what its relationship is to the, we'll call it the surface life that we are.
What a great story that would be.
Yeah.
Oh. Next up, we go to Thomas in La Jolla, California. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Hi, George, and great Veterans Day show, and I want to say thank you for your service, sir.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank
and
you.
And on this Thanksgiving, Linda, I and the Coast audience are grateful, appreciative, and deeply thankful for the excellence that you bring to investigative journalism.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. My question, Linda, you interviewed Philip Corso.
Yes.
And you also interviewed William Mills Tompkins.
Yes.
Corso revealed that as a protege of General Trudeau, he was distributing extraterrestrial artifacts to be back-engineered, reverse-engineered by American corporations.
Right.
And Tompkins, William Mills Tompkins, revealed that there was an actual technology transfer between factions of the extraterrestrials and distributed by the military again to corporations. And between the two of them, you can surmise that we have electronics, the internet, micro-miniaturization, microelectronics, desktop computers, etc. But there's another, there was an explosion in all of that hardware over the last 40 years. But there was another revolution, and that was the biotechnology revolution. And I'm talking about molecular engineering, bioengineering, genetic engineering. And I guess my question to you, Linda, is how much of this was trickled down reverse engineering from extraterrestrial technology, perhaps a technology transfer, and which created the biotechnology revolution that we have experienced over the last 40 years. And again, that would be genetic engineering, that would be, you know, molecular engineering, biotech, etc. It just seems to me like much of this is also extraterrestrial in origin.
Yeah, and there has been a thread that goes back to the 80s when I was first exposed to the concept of that the animal mutilations around the world were being done by, as Sheriff said, creatures from outer space as a genetic harvest. What would the genetic harvest be being used for? That was an early question. And somewhere toward the later 80s, the thread that started emerging and still comes to this day is that at least some of the grays have some kind of a survival problem. And that if we knew the big picture, if we knew the truth, that there is some connection between us as a life form on this planet now and them as a life form that may move interdimensionally and even use time in ways that we can't comprehend, and that they have some sort of a survival problem that relates to their biology, and that if we knew the truth over the last 50, 60 years, ever since the beginnings of the retrievals in the 40s, that we began to understand that that part of what we could help these non-humans with was this genetic harvest that might help correct whatever it is that's wrong. And when I say it's a thread because the same theme keeps coming up, but it is almost impossible to get anybody, if they know the whole story, to get anybody to talk or to get any documents or to get anything that is a hard paper trail that you really need. And that suggests to me that this thread is probably at the heart of one of the major reasons why there is a relationship between our government and our government. Truman wanted to get this out of, quote unquote, the federal level and get it into American companies and corporations. That would be the fastest way that they could keep this away from the public. The public would not have a right to go into corporate work that they might if it were staying in, let's say, the federal side of things. So corporations could hide these secrets, but also we would back engineer, make products that might be able to be applied to consumers in medicine, aerospace, and these two tracks. This has been going on since at least the 40s, a secret side of research probably aimed at developing weapons and helping some form of ET survive, and the other has been taking everything that we have been given and back engineered, put it into corporations, trying to get it into, we'll call it, the surface life of the world we live in, and it goes right to the heart of the two parallel tracks that you've mentioned that have accelerated so quickly. The technology and the biomedical, I think, are both the source is our collaboration and secret wars. Not everything is friendly. And that would explain why it would have been accelerated. If something is considered a threat, even by ETs that may have helped us, then everything would have been accelerated trying to reach a point, as Edward Teller said during the Reagan administration, there is a serious problem and we need to develop technology to deal with it. What he didn't say is that the problem that they perceived in Star Wars was extraterrestrial, not Russia.
When we come back in just a moment with Linda Moulton Howe, we'll take final phone calls, fast hour. Those of you on hold, just stay there so you don't lose your place. And we'll come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Her website again, earthfiles.com. And a couple of her books, An Alien Harvest, Glimpses of Other Realities, Volumes 1 and 2, Mysterious Lights and Crop Circles, and then a few DVDs, including A Strange Harvest. Well, just in case you didn't hear it, we're going to have a live Thanksgiving night program for you. Who's behind the secret door? A number of guests will be popping in. I've got to guess who they are. I did pretty well last time, but we shall see how we do and how we fare on Thanksgiving night. But we'll be with you, so have your little festive event, and if you didn't have time or you didn't have an opportunity, don't worry. Just sit around and enjoy the program with us tomorrow night on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back with our final segment here of your calls with Linda Moulton Howe. Linda, Jacques Vallée, of course, believes that the extraterrestrial situation is demonic, maybe dimensional. What do you think of that?
Definitely other dimensions are at play here. And the part that none of us can prove or know for sure, but would be part of the context for what he has done, and that is, if we're in a multi-dimensional universe, it is possible that a dimension could have the opposite of everything in this one, and if so, the yin and the yang symbol would be a metaphor. And it would mean that where there is dark and light and dark, it would be the perpetual tension between this dimension and another.
To the phones now we go. Mark in Baltimore, Maryland. Mark, thanks for holding. You're on with Linda. Go ahead.
Thank you, George. I appreciate it. Happy Veterans Day. I'm a veteran myself, as you know. And this is Linda Moulton Howe.
Yes, sir.
First of all, I want to say I've been following your work for 30 years. And it's an honor, high honor, to speak with you.
Thank you.
As I was growing up as a child in the 1960s, my late father always exhibited an ongoing fascination with UFOs. He would go to the nearest fountain store where I would look at comic books, and he would always buy the latest UFO books.
Right.
He was drafted into the Korean War for its entirety, and I didn't know what he did. Every time I asked him about what he did in the Korean War, he said he wasn't allowed to talk about it.
Wow.
But when he passed away, we got a letter from the Army saying that he was going to be buried at Arlington National Cemetery. And then before he passed away, he said, "You know, son, it's your time now." And I said, "What do you mean it's my time?" He said, "It's your time to enlist, and I want you to get a high clearance position like I did." So I did that. And anyway, after he passed away, while searching through his belongings, I discovered a cache of materials, a very old box that was heavily taped, and there were all the books and a bunch of papers and some photographs in there. And I put all the books on a bookshelf, and he had some folders and papers and photos and some folders that were taped shut, and I guess they were never returned. And I've been looking through them, and then I started looking through the books and noticed he was underlining and circling and highlighting certain things in the books that corresponded with his time in the war. So as I'm going through all that stuff, I'm still working on uncovering, you know, what exactly it is, what he's done. And I just wanted to say that if I learn anything, I'm going to send it to you at UFOfiles.com. That'd be the place to send it, right?
To earthfiles@earthfiles.com. That's my email. And have you come across anything that seems to be related to the whole UFO ET area yet?
From some grainy photos, he was a radio man. And some grainy photos, I don't know whether he took them or whether he was supplied with them, but just the kind of grainy photos that you would see in the August Roberts collection. You're familiar with that collection, aren't you, the late August Roberts collection?
I think so. And so what you mean is that in your father's box with the logbook and so forth, that there are grainy photos as if they were UFO photos.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, absolutely. And yeah, he was a radio man, so he had to keep a logbook, and I guess they never confiscated that stuff, or either that, or he tried to give it back, and they didn't want it back. But
Are you seeing shapes? Like, would you be able to tell whether it was lens-shaped, cylinder-shaped, round, sphere, triangle?
Cigar-shaped, some were cigar-shaped, some were disc-shaped, all black and white, nothing in color, but they were all daylight. That was a strange thing. You know, they were all daylight.
Right.
And those were taken definitely rare during
where he was stationed. Would it have been in South Korea?
Yes, absolutely.
Wow.
And that is consistent with when I said earlier that when I started going into Greenland and the Aleutian Islands in 50 to 53, it is amazing how much is there on the UFO front.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like I said, Linda, every time I asked him what he did, because I was always curious, you know, my fascination with the UFO phenomena grew with him, as he went to the drugstores picking up all the books he could find, trying to uncover new information. And every time I asked him what he did in the Korean War, he always said, "I'm not allowed to talk." He didn't ever say, "I can't talk about it." He always said, I'm quoting him, he always said, "I'm not allowed to talk about it." And then I even asked my mom, and my mom didn't know anything about
it. That's what Obama said to Jimmy Kimmel, right? Remember?
That's right.
What they tell us to say because they're not allowed to talk.
We are not allowed to talk.
Yeah. Did your father, I mean, when he passed, were you there when he actually died?
I was.
Did he indicate or say anything in that period? People who have been in the military.
All he said was, "Keep watching the skies." He said, "There's something up there."
That's intriguing.
Skies. That's all he said. He wouldn't say anything. He wouldn't give me any details. He wouldn't give me any deathbed confessions or anything like that because he was still afraid for the family. You know,
he was protecting you, Mark. He was protecting
you. Right, Exactly. My sister and the whole family was around him at his deathbed. And, you know, he just pulled me over, you know, whispered in my ears. He just said, Mark, son, you know, when you get in the military and everything, just keep watching the sky.
All right. Well, send what you can to Linda at earthfiles@earthfiles.com. And, you know, she'll do her homework on that.
Please do.
Linda, I sometimes think that the alien grays are robots. What do you think?
Oh, the small ones, without any question. There was a story that I did back in 2000, I think it was six, and it was, again, from a son, and his. It's one of those complicated family stories, but it led to the father had been at Wright-Patterson working in a medical department there. And got a call at 2 o'clock in the morning to go to Wright-Patt. In fact, was picked up in a limousine, driven there rapidly. There were already two men, already gowned, dressed with a visor, hat, the whole nine yards. And this man was ordered by a four-star general to take a clipboard and to watch what the other two surgeons were doing, and to make all notes of anything that this man could see. And what unfolded was, as the son was telling me about the father's experience at Wright-Patterson, when the surgeon decided how they were going to approach the body that was not human, that was lying on the surgery table, whether to do a Y or a T cut for the autopsy, that when they took the scalpel and started to pull down in what looked like skin, the scalpel would not move.
Wow.
And that the man with the clipboard made the note that this is not skin, this is some sort of manufactured technology. And that is where they began to realize that they were probably dealing with androids, right there.
Let's go to Donald in Kent, Ohio now. Hi, Donald. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you so much for your service, George.
Thank you.
You know, the forest fires in the southeast, I was listening to a religious program up in Cleveland, and the guys offered a very strange prayer request. He asked the angel to bind, or ask God to bind the angel of Revelation 14:18. That's the angel that has power over the fire from harming the people on Bald Mountain, North Carolina. That's just a little bit north of a Lake Lure, Bat Cave, Chimney Rock State Park.
Right.
And I have a family member that lives up there, and they said the fire stopped within 20 feet of her home. I thought that was really bizarre, but nobody on the mountain lost any property. In fact, the embers blew over, and they started a brush fire next to a bunkhouse, and the only thing happened there was that the siding, the vinyl siding, melted in that. Now, Linda, I was on your website doing a little research on chemtrails, and I noticed that over a billion trees have died as a result of the I guess borium powder and things that are being sprayed on that. And it's interesting, in Revelation 8:7, it says 1/3 of the trees are destroyed and all green grass. Could you comment about your chemtrail association with the trees?
Well, I'm not sure what you're referencing. I do remember vividly in 1996 getting some videos that people had taken where there was a clear blue sky, a silver plane with an orange circle on the tail, very unusual, spraying thick white something, and that in these two videos, Art Bell was doing Coast to Coast then, and I was doing sometimes weekly shows, and we would get these videos and discuss them, and that's why I remember this so vividly. And one of them, in the white trail, was a silver disc, clear as day, that was going up and down in the white spray that was coming out of the silver plane. And I remember on Coast to Coast then and Dreamland, that we began having people that were either sending in letters or saying that they had seen odd objects, even if they weren't videotaping. We had a couple of videotapes. They were seeing odd objects in these chemtrails. That was the 1996, I'll call it the testimony and the videos that gave a context for the chemtrails of an association with silver disks, even if they were small and not large, as if there was a technology that was clearly being, involved or at least active where these planes were spraying. Now, what I do not know and tried very hard in 96 through 1999, I tried extremely hard to get a whistleblower, a document, anybody who could get me into a paper trail that would connect some division, corporation, agency, anything to these silver planes with those orange circles. I've never been able to do it. The closest that I came was I did get to talk with Edward Teller himself about 4 years before he passed.
That's fascinating.
And it was because he had done a paper, and it had been presented in Italy, in which the whole bottom line, summarizing it, was if we are in a global warming period, would there be a way for technology to do something that would counteract increasing photon energy on the planet, and we would then begin to be able to have control over the heating and cooling of the planet. I talked with him about that. He said that, and when I asked him, sir, was your hypothesis about taking small metal, like aluminum, and they were at micron sizes, and the paper was, if we would take planes and do this very scientifically and release certain microns of metal at, let's say, 55,000 feet, and then at 45,000 feet and 35,000 feet, and they would have some markers so we would know which metal pieces had been released at which height, and then start measuring the impact of whether or not it was reflecting or deflecting photon energy, that we might begin to get a handle on how we could disperse metallic filings in the atmosphere and control global climate warming. And that was, I'm summarizing this complicated paper. And I said, sir, was that ever okayed? Do you know for a fact if your proposal was ever put into action? And he said, not to my knowledge. My guess is that Edward Teller came up with this plan and somebody decided that they were going to start doing it. But what are the silver planes with the orange circles, and why would small silver-looking UFOs have been in and around those planes? There's never been any answer. And in terms of what was sprayed, I don't have any proof that it did damage to trees or to anything else, although I understand that is a huge hypothesis now out there in what is called the urban legend category. How do we prove it? That's the problem.
That is the problem. West of the Rockies, Paul's in Seattle. Paul, go ahead, sir.
Thank you, George, for taking my call. Happy Thanksgiving.
You too, Paul.
And I'm thankful that I'm not with a reptilian now. But but I wanted to say real quickly, I have a friend, Jules, who's a Macaw Indian, and I was about to show her this picture and talk about these aliens, and she just started whipping off about, I was trying to get a hold of her what prophecy, but she started to talk about that there's the aliens are going to come back and that they're not going to, they're going to say they're our friends, but they're not going to really be our friends. But I'll, when I get more information on that, I'll let you know. But and then the other guy answered my question
really
about
quickly on that.
Sure.
That is so important for our audience. I really am convinced we have allies, and that they are truly friendly and supportive. and that we all need to hang on to that. We're still here. Humans are here. We are evolving. Whatever is out there that may be dangerous, I think we have allies that have a way of dealing with that. And I just want, on this Thanksgiving, to leave people with that.
A little hope.
Yes.
But they are dangerous. There are some out there that are dangerous.
I believe there is something that is dangerous, but we've been here on this planet a long time. I am more curious to understand who, what, and why. I don't want to run away from learning about dangerous ones. I want to know everything I can possibly learn about what is dangerous and why, so that we all could learn how to be stronger.
And you will get to the bottom of it for sure. Linda, have a great Thanksgiving. Linda Moulton Howe. For Dan Galante, Donna Walker, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burleson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.